Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the main course. I'm Alexis McLaughlin, and I'm here with Philip Gilmore. We are taking over for Patrick Martins. And welcome to the first show of 2015.
Yeah, Happy New Year's.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too. We're going to start this show by introducing ourselves to you and kind of to each other.
So I think what the plan is, me and Alexis don't really know each other that well. So we're going to do kind of introduce ourselves to each other and to you, the listeners. So I guess the plan is we're going to have a few questions for each other and answer those and get a little history about each other for the show and you, the listener. And then later on, we're going to have Mark Hurst in the studio, who's a good friend of mine and also a Korean food expert and probably makes the best kimchi in New York City. So we have a few questions for him since we are both ignorant to the world of Korean food. Yeah, he will hopefully enlighten us to some fun facts about kimchi and Korean food.
Awesome. Well, let's get started with a few questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you want to ask first?
Sure. I'm going to ask first. So where are you from?
That's always a hard question to answer. I guess my family's all from Brooklyn. But moved down to Florida when I was young. So,
what part of Florida?
Down in Naples, Florida. So southwest, just above the Everglades.
Yeah.
Real exciting place.
Yeah.
A lot of old people. But it's beautiful. I don't know. I love going back. Love visiting my family.
Have you ever been to the Mucky Duck or the Bubble Room?
I have been to the Bubble Room.
The Bubble Room. That's
when
a great restaurant.
When I was a little kid, it was just amazing.
Yeah, it's a crazy guy, and he has all this Hollywood memorabilia and all these little knickknacks, and the tables are made out of glass, and there's things inside the table.
I just remember the bubbles. They were, like, magical because they filled the entire entranceway. They just had, like, all these bubble machines going.
Yep.
I don't know. It was crazy. What about you, Phil? Where are you from?
I was actually born in Kansas and left there when I was about six, and then grew up in actually the other coast of Florida and West Palm Beach, Florida. That's where I grew up. Yeah.
Awesome.
From the time I was six. Yeah. So you have a question for me?
Yeah. Sure. All right. So food that you love mm-hmm. that no one else understands. Like,
I think a lot, some people understand this, but I am obsessed with like organ meats, even not even the fancy stuff, not even like foie gras, but like chicken liver and gizzards and hearts, and I think they're the most underutilized ingredient, and I love eating them. I love cooking with them.
Is that something
I crave
you grew
them.
Up with? Or?
Most of my heritage way back when is mostly like Irish and Scottish, so I kind of like secretly think that I'm genetically predisposed to crave like haggis and in all its glory.
That's a theory. I guess mine comes from my grandfather, and just everyone revolts when I tell them this, but I love sour cream with bananas and sugar.
Wow.
Like just like a big bowl of sour cream.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Like people don't realize the sour cream, it's light. It's like creme fraiche or like a yogurt that is unsweetened, but the, you know, sugar, like the granules of the mm-hmm. sugar, you kind of add a crunch and the sour cream is light and the bananas, or I mean like peaches, whatever kind of soft, sweet fruit is in season.
Well, I'm definitely going to go try it now.
Yeah. No, it's good. People think I'm disgusting.
Aw.
Question for you.
Okay. Did you go to school?
I did. I went to, I graduated 2 degrees from Florida State University, got my first degree in economics mm-hmm. and my second degree in political science. And because I was, you know, really thinking about my future, I minored in geology.
Mm-hmm, of course.
That's relevant. Yeah. What about you?
I went to college twice for about less than a year each time, and both times just like quit and went traveling. So, yeah. So I went to the School of Hard Knocks. Yeah.
Learning on the road.
Yeah.
I have really, like, you know, just in-depth questions, just sure. to let you guys know.
Awesome.
Pet peeves.
Pet peeves. I don't really have many pet peeves. As I've gotten older, I've tried to kind of be more compassionate, and realizing that my pet peeves are kind of maybe reflective of my own insecurities. So I guess my biggest pet peeve would be like lying. I kind of don't have a lot of tolerance for lying, but
that's fair.
And then also, like, maybe just in general in society, like people that are impatient, like on the subway or in line and stuff like that. I'm like, listen, you know, there's people in the world that, you know, the cliche is, you know, standing in bread lines, for instance, you know, like in Russia for 3 hours. So I'm like, just, you know, just it's not that bad. Just be patient, you know. So impatience, I guess, in lying would be my two pet peeves. And you?
Pet peeves. I have very specific pet peeves, but only a few.
Yeah.
I guess my first, when you're driving in a car, you're not the driver, and it's drizzling out, and someone has their windshield wipers on like turbo blast, mm-hmm. and it's just like, mm-hmm. that literally kills me. second pet peeve. Would anyone that attributes the song Under Pressure to David Bowie?
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's a Queen song.
Yeah.
It was written by Queen. It was performed exclusively by Queen. David Bowie lent his vocals on the chorus.
Yeah.
But he never even performed it live until, you know, a tribute concert to Freddie Mercury in the early 90s.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess that one bothers me.
These are good pet peeves to have.
And then third pet peeve, John Mayer.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. What drew you to Heritage Foods?
So I guess we'll give a little background. I work at Heritage Foods with Patrick Martins. He's the founder and president.
He's one of my favorite people in the entire world.
He's everyone's favorite person. He's the rarest breed of all.
Yeah.
You know, it's the strangest story. I actually started working for Heritage because my roommate is friends with Catherine Greeley, who's the director of mail order. And they were looking for some holiday help, you know, like literally just building boxes and stuffing envelopes. So I came in. I just did the warehouse, you know, heavy lifting for a few months. And I really liked it. I loved the product. I thought it was amazing. I love the mission. I really love the people. And I just kind of grew my own place there.
Yeah.
It was completely unplanned. I was actively looking for another job the entire time I was there. But I loved it. They asked me to stay. And
you just kind of planted yourself and made yourself an inevitability. An inevitability? What is that? Is that the right word? No? No, I'm saying you kind of made yourself indisposable by working there.
Indisposable. I don't know if I'm indisposable, but I definitely ingratiated myself in the team. And yeah. I don't know. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
Yeah. When Roberta's first opened, I kind of helped out and waited tables here and there. In the beginning, this is, you know, years ago, I guess 6 years ago now. And then Patrick would always come in, and, you know, that's how I got to know him. And actually I own Momo Sushi Shack, which is next door here. And I've been serving his products, for the entire time. And I just love everything about Heritage Food and the product and Patrick. And I'm honored to know him, and I'm honored to even be on this show.
Yeah. You guys are great supporters. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. Love going in. All right. Next question from me.
Yeah.
I don't even know where we are. Celebrity crush.
A celebrity crush. I don't currently have any celebrity crushes really, but I would have to say growing up, I would have to say Bjork. Maybe Bjork. And then also too, I guess maybe Living or Dead. Living or Dead, I have to say Anne Lindbergh, Charles Lindbergh's wife. She was absolutely just stunning.
I don't know.
Anne Lindbergh. Yeah. It was Charles Lindbergh's wife. Look at a picture. I never met the woman. But I've only seen pictures, but I think she's a classic beauty. And then in my own mind, my girlfriend Jordan Haddadi is very famous in my mind, and I have a huge crush on her. Yeah,
that's good to have.
Yeah,
that's a lucky man.
Who's your celebrity crush? John Mayer.
Surprisingly not John Mayer. Yeah. I asked this question and I wasn't sure if Living or Dead was eligible too.
Yeah.
But if that's on the table, yeah. I gotta say Jeff Buckley.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know. I've been listening to Grace, in the new year. It just kind of came back into my rotation.
He's in my top five.
Yeah. Of celebrity crushes.
Yeah. Living or Dead.
And then Patrick Fugit, who is,
interesting.
He's great. He's done great projects. I just have a little girl crush on him.
And almost famous. He's almost famous.
He is.
He's literally almost famous.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's the guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's the guy from Almost Famous.
Yeah.
And I guess my first celebrity crush probably was Benny the Jet Rodriguez from Sandlot.
Oh, yeah. I think my first celebrity crush was my very first when I'm talking like five was the original the album Heart by Heart. It had a picture of, you know, the sisters on it, and I was just like,
don't date yourself.
Yeah, like, I just like would look at the album and I was like, they're pretty. what food do you cook at home?
I used to cook at home a lot more than I do now. I think time. I'm so busy. I cook a lot of heritage meat, which is, you know, pretty great perk of the job.
Yeah.
I cook a lot of pasta. Kind of grew up with that as a family staple.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of specific, like, just kind of basic dishes, really. You know, I love cooking eggs at home. Maybe that's it. Like,
yeah.
I just put eggs in everything.
Eggs.
Yeah, my favorite. Something I did recently. I love taking leftovers and reinventing them. That's like...
I swear to God, I was going to, after you're done speaking, which now I've interrupted you, but I was going to tell you that I have a theory, and I would love it if anybody can prove this wrong. Anything that you get from a restaurant, leftovers from a restaurant, you know, when you take your leftovers home, anything that you get, if you chop that up and put it in a pan and saute in olive oil, you can make an omelet out of it.
So the last time my sister was up here, we got dinner in Little Italy, and I brought home just like pasta bolognese and... had it the next night. It was just so much food. Had a huge, you know, to-go box of it. So I put it in a cast iron and made little baskets in the linguine and cracked eggs into like, you know, four eggs.
Yeah.
And then I baked that in the oven. Wow. Well, I think I sauteed the pasta first to kind of warm everything up and then baked the eggs in the oven, sprinkled a little cheese on top. And the eggs were just like a perfect medium. It was just the most amazing thing ever.
Awesome. Even last night we were doing a ramen dish, and I love if somebody has just a little bit of ramen left over. What I do, I strain out the broth, and I tell them to mix that with the eggs, and then saute the noodles until they're almost crispy, and then make an omelet out of it. It's great.
Is that your home go-to?
You know, I was thinking about it when I wrote down the question, if you asked me, and it's really funny. Like, at home, I think what I really do is I saute vegetables, like root vegetables. I love, like, if I'm at home, I just love taking vegetables and putting some sort of oil and salt and pepper, and just that's it. Maybe a little noodles, maybe a little this, but, like, really, like, what I like cooking at home is, like, roasting vegetables. It's kind of simple, but that's kind of my kind of go-to thing.
That's good to have.
Yeah.
All right. Next question for me. First job.
My first job is I've been working since I've been in fourth grade. So pretty much besides vacations here and there, I've been working since I was in fourth grade. So I, in fourth grade, sold newspapers door to door. Newspaper subscriptions in fourth grade.
That's...
Yeah. It was kind of
in Kansas?
In Florida, in West Palm Beach, Florida. Yeah. I don't even remember how I got the job, but this guy Harold would pick me up, and me, him, his son, and this other kid would go. We'd start at about, like, I guess about 5 o'clock and be done around 7:30, and he would drive us to different neighborhoods and drop us off, and we'd go down one block and then knock on the door, and I would just be like, hi, would you buy a newspaper subscription? So, yeah.
Were you earning money? Like, is that legal?
Yeah.
How young were you?
I was like 10, 11. I did it for like 2 years. I think it's legal. Okay. I was getting paychecks though.
I guess paper routes.
Yeah,
you know?
By the time I was in sixth grade, I had like I think like $1,000 or something. Yeah, my parents would get the paychecks, and I had a bank account, but I was only allowed to take a certain amount, like 30% or something, out. But it was kind of fun.
Parenting.
Yeah. I saw E.T. in the theater I think 5 times, but with like my own money. Like, I'm going to go to see E.T. again because I can. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how about you? What was your first job?
I guess I grew up working with my dad. He's a banker, but he has his general contractor's license. So we used to do, just fixing up places and just do some work on our own house and other houses. But, that's not really anything I got paid for. So it was more just, like his indentured servant, which aww. I guess all children are.
Yeah.
I guess first real job was working at a like fast food style, healthy alternative kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Based all around like rotisserie chicken and,
How old were you?
I was probably, I guess I was like 16 or 17
mm-hmm.
awesome. And I started working there. But it was great. It was a brand new kitchen, and my friend's dad was like kind of managing the restaurant. He's, he worked for Johnson Wales and was very smart. And we got all this new kitchen equipment in, and like a combi oven. And we had, some guy come in and train us all. And I guess I was the only one paying attention. So I quickly moved up to kitchen manager because I was the only one that could work the oven.
Yeah.
So that was like my first job.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. Slinging fast food, healthy chicken.
I love it.
Do you have any other questions?
If you could go to any country in the world right now, where would it be?
That one's... There's so many places I really want to visit. For a while, I was really wanting to go somewhere exotic, somewhere different. I imagine going to places that are less traveled, places in Africa. Oh, you know what I think it would be? There's a place, and I think it's in Pakistan. Where the Beatles, where they recorded that album on houseboats, and it's like this beautiful, this beautiful houseboats on this, lake in, by the Himalaya mountains.
Wow.
in the background. I don't know. It just looks really amazing and peaceful and just...
I was actually in the Himalayas about like 2 years ago. I spent a couple months in Nepal, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think I want to go there.
Yeah.
What about you? Where's your next?
I think it's practically. I think the next place I'll go is probably Morocco. My girlfriend's her father's Moroccan, so she still has a lot of family there, including your grandmother. So I'd like to sometime this year maybe make it to Morocco. If time and money were not an issue, I think I would want to go to, like Bora Bora or the Maldives or Tahiti or Fiji, one of those places, like
just
crazy,
yeah.
Crazy, sick in the middle of nowhere, tropical island, yeah. That's not near Florida.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
If time and money were not options.
Yeah.
All right. Last question from me.
Yes.
Embarrassing fact about yourself.
Ooh, embarrassing fact about myself. I have to think. Well, I guess we're on a radio show, and I guess I owe it to you and the listeners to be vulnerable. So I guess I would have two. I guess the first one would be that not their entire discography, but I really love the first two Coldplay albums.
Oh.
I love them, and I've made the mistake of like getting somebody that says, I hate Coldplay. I'm like, no, please, just sit here and listen to here's the lyrics. Just please go on this journey with me, and it never ends up very well. So now I just keep my mouth shut. Yeah.
I gotta say, I always say I hate Coldplay. And I think it's more just, you know, to be edgy and to hate something that's kind of easy to like.
Yeah.
But when the songs come on, there's a part of me that is just like, this is pretty pleasant. And it was Brian Eno produced all of Coldplay's albums, no?
I don't know if that's true. He produced a lot of U2 albums.
I feel like he had...
Really?
He took part in Coldplay. Well, we'll have to fact check that.
It would make sense because he's a genius and the two albums are great. Yeah. I haven't listened to anything past that, but...
I don't know if I've ever tried full albums. Maybe I'll give it a shot.
You know what's so funny is that when Coldplay first came out, everybody was... This was like, I guess, like maybe 2000, 2001... And I always said, oh, I hate Coldplay, but I was working at a restaurant and there was two or three songs that would always come on and I'd be like, oh my God, I love this song. And I never knew who it was because I always thought Coldplay was like a, like Limp Bizkit or like, you know, one of those like, you know, like hard, you know, hard, like, you know,
just, I don't know
like,
how you got that.
I didn't know Coldplay. Doesn't Coldplay sound like some like, you know, like no. fake metal band a little bit? No, to me, I know in my mind, but.
All right. What's your second?
The other one is that that not only are there a few Meg Ryan movies that I actually like, but I actually cry in, Lost. City of God. No, what's the? I don't even know the
Lost
names.
Lost
Angels.
No, it's the
with Nicolas Cage.
The one that
City of Angels.
Okay, the Iris song. Yeah. Oh, what's that been? Goo Goo Dolls.
Yes, yes.
They did the theme song.
And then
for
the Alanis Morissette Uninvited song is on there. That and like Sleepless in Seattle.
Embarrassing.
Yeah, I cry at the if they're on cable. I'm just bored and I'm flipping through channels. I will stop, and I will cry.
Yeah,
that's pretty bad.
I think that's pretty close to mine. I cry in movies anyway. Like I'm just a movie crier. I'm just a chicken baby. Like, you know, this hard exterior, cold exterior stops as soon as I'm in a theater, and then I'm just like a big old baby.
Yeah.
But I cry every time I watch Happy Gilmore.
Aww.
But like at a very specific part, and I could be flipping through. Well, not that I have cable, but if you know, I'm at my parents' house on the couch and. If I flip through and I find you know when Happy goes to his happy place and Carl Weathers is there, like it's after he died.
and the midget with the tricycle. A dwarf, yeah.
And all of a sudden Carl Weathers is just like, look, Happy, I got two hands. And then he starts playing the piano and singing. Like if I come into that movie just at that part, like even sometimes thinking about it. Like or describing it, I just start crying. I don't know. That's just a beautiful movie moment.
Oh, that's very vulnerable and beautiful that you've shared that with us.
That's embarrassing.
Oh.
Well,
I definitely feel like I know you better now after hearing those things.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I revealed too much. Do you have any more questions?
I think I'm good.
All right, then we're going to go to a quick break and...
And we'll be back with Mark Hurst and ask him, drill him about kimchi and other things.
Awesome.
Great. Cheers.
National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Oh, the Brandon Hoy. All right, we're back with the main course. We've got guest here, Mark Hurst, he's with Harmony Kimchi, and he revealed to us during the break that he also has a crush on Meg Ryan.
I don't have a crush on Meg Ryan. I just have an affinity for her sappy movies.
Definitely have a crush on Meg Ryan.
All right, well, let's get started. Mark is a expert on Korean food.
Mark is an expert on everything. Mark is a musical savant. He's also an expert on, like his father before him, an expert on samurai and ninja, so we can also do a whole separate show on that. I guess maybe we start off and maybe just start off with kimchi. Maybe could you give us a little bit of a history of kimchi, what it is? Pretend like we have never heard the word kimchi. What is kimchi?
Kimchi is a traditional Korean dish that is predominantly made with hot chili peppers, and a Napa cabbage is the most common variety. But you could do it out of almost any vegetable you can possibly find. And then it's usually then pickled and stored away for like months, traditionally like buried underground. And then, you know, you bring it back up and eat it, and it's delicious.
Yeah. When me and a couple of minutes ago, me and Alexis were talking about it produces some sort of like lactic acid or something. It produces a probiotic. Yeah.
So
which helps with digestion and stuff.
Correct.
So it's actually very healthy for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, like Korean food has kind of come onto the scene in the past, few years, a lot more than I think it was, you know, noticed before. Maybe that's just my perception or limited exposure. I know that I definitely have, whenever I'm trying, you know, different food or it's coming from another culture, it's really important to me that I think it's respectful for the culture to, you know, eat it or try and, you know, use it how it's intended. And I have to say, like, I'm a little ignorant of Korean food and kimchi, because it's like put on the table when you first sit down, but it's served kind of like a condiment. I don't know what to do with it.
It's used as both a condiment and an ingredient. Like, you can eat it on the side with anything, but there's also several variety of different Korean dishes that actually use kimchi as an ingredient in it. Like you use it in, like, soup stock. You can add the brine to almost, like, anything. And because you know, in, like, a Korean household, there are so many different varieties that, like, you know, anything from, like, spinach to, like, to radish to sometimes even, like, carrot or anything else, you can turn that into kimchi. So it has, like, a multi-purposeful form.
And I guess my question is, like, you know, do I have the green light? Like, when there's nothing else on the table and I'm starving and they just put the kimchi down, are you allowed to, like, pick at that? Are you supposed to eat that then?
Most
or
definitely.
Or wait to add it to
You could eat it with anything.
Okay. Or nothing.
Or nothing. I mean, I do that quite often.
You know, I was actually going to look this up, but instead I thought I'd just ask you. So, bibimbap.
Bibimbap.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bibimbap. Sometimes is it made with raw meat and sometimes not raw meat? And because sometimes I've been at places and I've tried to explain, like, I've had it with raw. Is there one with raw meat?
I mean, you could kind of make bibimbap with anything. It's not necessarily a set series of ingredients. As long as you have, like, rice, usually some vegetables, any kind of, like, protein,
it's in a stone pot?
Well, that's dulsa. You know,
okay.
That's specific. Like, in the old days, you would, like, heat up a stone pot, and because, you know, that's, like, what you have is, like, you have, like, a fire that you're heating stuff on, so you kind of use that to cook with. That, I think, is the best way to get it. But at home, especially nowadays in Korea, like, you just eat it in a bowl with anything.
Yeah.
As long as you have, like, gochujang, which is, like, a spicy fermented pepper paste,
mm-hmm.
like, that's a sauce that you use to mix it with.
Yeah.
That gives it its spiciness and a little bit of sweetness. It's really, I love that stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. What was I going to say? You know what I was going to ask you is, I know sometimes there's things that pop up they're exactly the same thing, but then Japan says we invented it, Korea says we invented it, or China says they invented it. Is there a couple of examples that you know of that, like, maybe other people say we invented it, but Korea did, or vice versa. I know there's the, you know, whole shochu shoju thing, but
yeah, there's like there's a few things. Like there's one thing that I find that like my mom would always say about jajangmyeon, which is like a Korean noodle dish, and that she always swears that it's Korean, but I actually think its root probably goes back to China more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fermented black bean paste. Mm-hmm. So you see the sauce a lot, and even on like Chinese food menus, oftentimes you can go to a place and order something that says like, you know, cha myeon, like with a ch.
Yeah,
but in Korean it's pronounced jajangmyeon, and then I forget how it's pronounced in Japanese, but it's kind of similar because you have that there as well.
Yeah.
So you have it in like all three cultures, and any one of them are going to say it's like it comes from us. More than likely, it's probably Chinese, but it goes back so long that it's really kind of hard to tell anymore. And I grew up eating jajangmyeon in Korea, and so that's like something I always associate with that. But I've gone to Chinese restaurants and seen that and gotten really excited. It tastes a bit different, but it's basically the same thing. You use black bean paste in a lot of like Chinese dishes anyway, so it's something that you can kind of see across the table.
Yeah.
Is there any component of Korean food that separates it that is just like very distinctly Korean, or is kind of like a trend or a thread throughout the cuisine that is, you know,
well,
different or unique?
Kimchi, really. I mean, it's the national food. Like, it's like you see, like, again, like not just as a side dish, but also as like an ingredient in a variety of different dishes. Like everything from like you can get like a style of kimchi leaf where it's like the whole leaf, and then you will like wrap food in it and eat it like that. That's really delicious. And so that's something where it's just like, it's not just a condiment. It becomes like an important component to the meaning, almost like doing like a sauerkraut wrap or some kind of a cabbage wrap or a lettuce wrap. Exactly. And so that's something that's also commonly served as a condiment in Korean households, is something like lettuce or like a genyip, which is like Korean style shiso leaf, like on the side, and use it to wrap food in. So oftentimes you'll have like a bowl of rice, a bunch of different side dishes, and then you'll take rice onto something like a lettuce wrap, and then spread hot pepper paste, and then a bit of this other, like whatever ingredients you want to put in, and roll it up and eat it, almost like a taco.
And you make kimchi.
Yeah,
that's kind of a project that you have that you do personally.
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, it's something I came into like again, like really personally. Like that's like
This is Harmony Kimchi.
Correct. I learned to do it from like helping my grandmother when I was a child, and then like ending up in a situation where it's like I need to like also make this for my mother and my father and for like a family, and then I just got used to making it, so I just kept on making it. And then when I didn't have like a whole family to serve it to, I was like, well, does anybody else want some? And that's how I ended up here today, I guess.
Is it, and this is, I don't know, is it typical for, you know, a male in a household to be the cook?
No, generally not. I think like in Korean culture nowadays, like there's a lot of people that go to like culinary school. They're still predominantly, I think, male. But in the household, it's generally female. And so it's like I learned that from like, you know, helping out my mom occasionally around the house, and mostly from like my grandparents still lived in like rural Korea. So I'd go visit them every summer as a kid, and like, oh, my grandma's getting old. So my mom was like, hey, you got to help her. And I was like, okay. But, you know, I think that's like a normal thing that kids do.
So now we're going to get into the hard questions.
Okay.
No, if you don't know the answer to this, that's fine. It just popped up into my mind. This is not premeditated. But do you know much about the cuisine of North Korea? That's what I was just thinking about.
Well,
obviously there has to be, if not 100 years ago, definitely now there definitely is a difference between the cuisine. But do you know in North Korea what they eat?
That's a good question. No, I don't really know. I mean, like, so many things translate over, but you're right. Like, after so long, there's a lot of things that's changed. Probably a lot having to do with, like, trade embargoes for, what, since the 60s at least?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ingredients that for instance, I think of Korean food, I instantly think of Spam.
Yeah.
I am fairly confident to assume that North Korea maybe never received that because it's predominantly like an American kind of a thing.
But the post-Korean War when they separated.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so it's like both Japan and Korea have this like relationship with Spam because of, you know, America going in after a war, helping rebuild. So it's like you know, servicemen are like airdropping, you know, spam to people that otherwise don't have access to food.
Yeah.
So as like the culture begins to build up, recovering from the war, they get used to eating it.
Yeah.
North Korea, I'd imagine, never really received that.
Can you imagine never having spam?
I can't. I have to eat it like at least once a month. Otherwise, I kind of go crazy.
I don't know if I've ever had spam.
Really? Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. A friend of Mark and I's, Mitchell, is a writer, and he did an article about spam because he's also from Hawaii. So, you know, Hawaii has this really rich tradition with spam. And spam found out about it and sent him a case. And do you know there's like 20 different flavors of spam?
No.
There's, I think, a sriracha one. There's a garlic one. There's a teriyaki.
There's so many varieties.
I've nothing against canned meat, too. Yeah. I Vienna sausages. That's, you know, I guess I
if you like Vienna sausages, spam is like the complex big brother of Vienna sausage. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember like it wasn't until maybe I was like in high school I realized I could get spam like in like a gas station like in the States. Well, like when my experience was like during like the 80s, I lived in Seoul with like my mother, and at that time period, like spam was a little bit hard to get a hold of. And, like, I went to school there, so I had friends that lived on the American military base, and they had spam. And it was this thing that I didn't necessarily understand when I was younger. I'd go over there to play video games with a friend. My mom would have, like, American dollars and be like, here's a backpack. I need you to go to the grocery store and buy, like, multiple things of spam. I'm like, okay. So I would, like, come home with, like, 12 cases, and there would be, like, everybody else from the neighborhood. My mom would be, like, handing it out because it was such, like, a well-sought-out thing. But it became harder to get a hold of at a certain point when they're, like, Because in America, they're like, okay, during war and Reconstruction, it's like people need food. But then, like, once Korea comes in the 80s, it doesn't need to be airdropped or anything anymore. It becomes, like, an import item. So for a long time, it would, like, show up on a menu as kind of, like, fancy. I always thought it was kind of fancy because I had to, like, smuggle it out and, like, bring it home. And then, like, you know, being in the States, we didn't really eat it that much because I guess, you know, my dad was like, well, I don't want to eat spam, you know. But then when I got older, I was like, man, I missed that thing. What was that dish, Mom? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, wait. That stuff I used to buy. Oh crap! I could get this anywhere, man.
That's
kind of cool.
How something can infiltrate, you know, a culture and become
totally
become a staple.
Oh yeah.
You know, I had a question for you. In reverse to the spam, your kimchi is vegan. Can you talk a little bit about why it's vegan? Because it's not like a thing that you're doing it to kind of make it cool, that, you know, because be, you know, like but a lot of times kimchi has some sort of fish stock or dried fish in
it. Sauce and like shrimp paste and oysters are generally pretty common. Mine doesn't because I've co-opted this process that I learned from my grandma from doing chores. Yeah. Like when I first made kimchi, I looked up like a bunch of recipes online and I tried to make a batch and I'd bring it home to my mother and she was like, this is disgusting. And I was like, all right, I mean, I don't really know what I'm doing. But one of the things I do remember is like, you know, it's chores. I hated doing them. Mm-hmm. But it's something that I had to help my grandma with. I was like, I remember this process. I can go through that. And the main deal was is like when you would salt the cabbage, all this excess water comes out. And most recipes call for you to dump it. And but because of where my grandparents are from, you don't dump anything. Yeah. So you save that. And because it's like, you know, you're using like crushed sea salt and stuff in it, when you save it, it becomes this brine that's naturally salty and kind of oceany in terms of flavor. Mm. So it still ends up having this flavor that's kind of, you know, the fishiness that you would get from the sea or whatever.
Umami.
Umami, correct. But without actually using fish sauce or shrimp paste.
Awesome.
Yeah. And Mark, can you tell us, you know, where is there any way to find you or find Harmony Kimchi, or do you have any plans in the future, any kind of contacts to, what if someone's interested in talking to you more about your kimchi?
Well, I mean,
or any question, I guess.
There are several people you can wander around in Bushwick and ask me by name, Mark Hurst, or possibly even Harmony. But I tend to show up at farmers markets, holiday sales. I'm in the process of now beginning to distribute and sell to actual restaurants. So I'm slowly sneaking in there. But
actually, the first time I met Mark, he told me about his kimchi, and he showed up to my my restaurant the next day with a suitcase. Really quickly, sure. Before you go, Mark is a musician, and you have an album coming out. Is that true? I thought?
Yes.
Just shameless self-promotion. Maybe
tell self-promotion if you're promoting him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're family, so shameless self-promotion for us. No, go ahead.
Well, yes, I perform as A Pleasure, and I have a full-length album coming out here in the next few months.
On what label?
On Other People. I put out an EP back in March. The irony is, I think You know, I used to sell jars of kimchi with a download code with, like, music on it that I had made.
That's awesome.
How did that go over? You get a lot of...
I had a lot of fans for both my music and kimchi through that process, so...
That's awesome. Well, we'll definitely put up a link with information on cool. both kimchi and your music project. And what's the name of the band or...
Oh, A Pleasure.
A Pleasure.
Mark, it's been... A pleasure.
No, you've been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for coming in, man.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, this has been so much fun, and I look forward to the coming weeks. Making Patrick proud of what we have done with his brainchild.
Hopefully, making him proud.
Yeah, definitely.
Not hearing any
negative feedback.
Yeah. We will be with you next Sunday and every Sunday
forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, so yes. Look forward to that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone.
Yeah.
Have a good Sunday.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.